from West Babylon, New York. This is Sports Talk 1240.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to Sports Talk 1240 on this Sunday, February 26, 2017. Broadcasting live from the studios at WGBB, 1240 AM and 95.9 FM. I am Gary Harding, your host tonight, along with John Sweeney. John Panarese is on assignment tonight, and we will be talking on the first... For this hour, talking about the state of the NHL, specifically our beloved Islanders, as the trade deadline hits in less than 72 hours from now. And then at 8:40, we're going to speak with a gentleman by the name of Kirk McKnight, who has wrote a book on, and we're going to specifically talk about the voices of baseball, the game's greatest broadcasters reflect on America's pastime. John and I have been talking before earlier this morning and stuff like that, and I'm actually excited to talk to Kirk because he's also got a book on hockey as well, hockey's broadcasters. To me, you know, wanting to do this kind of a thing for a living was always something I wanted in the back of my head, but my father being the former Coast Guardsman and military person and stuff like that says, no, you're going to a military academy, you're going to learn computer science, and I did, and then, of course, 30 years later, I get the dream of doing what I'm doing now with you. So it's gonna be fun. So John, what's going on, dude?
Nothing, man. The Islanders, man, they playing good.
Except for last night. But you know what? Again, as we were talking when you walked in to the radio station earlier, if you would have told me at the beginning of the first part of this trip, if we went 2-1, I would have been thrilled. You know, get four out of 6 points, keep yourself in the conversation, in the hunt. That's exactly what you wanted. I would have thought it would have been a different script. I would have thought they would have lost in Montreal on Thursday night. But, Mr. Beauvillier, does his job in front of, family and friends and gets the first goal in that 3-0 shutout. Yeah. That was a wonderful display. And it's one of those stories that, you know, you can't script those enough. That's a movie script.
Did you see what they did? They actually gave him the number one star up there. They actually let him. He came out, skated around, didn't have his helmet on.
Well, that's,
came out, skated.
Well, that's Montreal for you. That's
class,
Montreal hockey.
That's class, yeah.
They are class personified. There is no doubt about what they do with, you know, with not only their team, La Canadienne, but what they do with people of the French Canadian background. So, you know, I thought that was a very class move.
And he grew up, he even said it. He came out straight and said it. I grew up as a Montreal fan.
It's amazing. We've already got a phone call. So, we might as well take a call. You're on the air. Sports Talk 1240. What's going on?
Hi, this is Doug. Are you guys, got me on right now?
Yeah, Doug, you're on. Hey, what's going on?
God bless, man. You guys are incredibly fast. So you remembered me from last week.
Yes.
I didn't even get a chance to get to the recorder. I wanted to talk about how you guys sized up the Mets this year.
Oh, well, there
and
you
I
go.
I think if you remember from last 2 weeks ago, I wanted to talk about play selection. Just why people that make, 8 million figures a year, how can they screw up play selection, which is really the main reason why the Giants lost through the year, throughout the whole year. It wasn't really necessarily the way they played. It's how if they're given the wrong plays, I mean, even the best high school team in the nation can screw up. It doesn't matter. If their play selection is not there, you got to go 5 yards. Why would you do a sluggo or a fade pattern in the end zone and go 30 yards deep? And the Giants just did that all year. They try to force the ball.
Well, you know,
talk about that subject too.
Because they have Beckham. And Beckham is an explosive player. They have the other rookie Sterling.
I agree.
I mean, he's the most electrifying wide receiver in football.
I agree.
You know.
I agree, but it's a team sport, and you can't rely on one person. There's only been one savior. Here's a good trivia question. What's the one savior in pretty much the history of sports that ever saved a basketball team? It must have been a team. As much as I hated them, who do you think the answer is?
I'm not really a basketball person, to be honest with you,
okay.
So you're going to have to kind of...
Well,
that's true. The Bulls were a lousy team before they drafted them.
And then they were awesome. And Babe Ruth, those are pretty much the two, you know, the two people. So, you know, and football is definitely a team sport, and it's not a sport of points. It's a sport of yardage, and that's What? That's another reason why there's so much party in the league.
Well, you know, Doug,
you only have five basic good football teams,
yeah.
And the Giants could be one of them because they got great players.
I will say this. The Giants, well, Dallas has got a, they got a tough division in that division too, but Dallas will win, and I'm a Jet fan. My diehard
Jet
fan.
We are diehard Jet fans on this show.
And I'll tell you this though.
But that's okay. I have total respect for the Giants. I have no hatred.
You should be that one of the happiest guys in New York right in this area right here because you got two Super Bowls under your belt, and I have one I never even saw. So I mean, plus with Paul Sells back in the day.
We'll win, and I'm a Jet fan.
Are you there?
Yeah, we're here. We're here. You. But you know what, Doug? When you came on the air, you actually talked about the Mets, and that's actually what we're talking baseball later on. So what's the Met issue?
You know, I love my Mets, and they have had some great players. You know, they were one pitch away, and literally Familia gave up the most important pitch in the last 2 years in the playoffs and in the World Series. You can't really blame that.
I can't.
But
you can't kill him
for that. Same guys back. They pretty much get the same guys back. Duda, I love Lucas Duda. He's a good player. He's not a great player. You know, and I think Loney was the guy. He was pretty much a consistent player. And I just feel that Duda's not.
Well, you know what?
It's going to be the same old Duda. And the Mets from year to
you know
year
what, Doug?
The same old players.
Doug, did you watch the game today?
I watched part of the game.
Have you seen Dominic Smith? I mean, I am telling you from people I've talked to that are scouts that are involved with the game, this kid is going to be amazing. He had a breakout year in Binghamton last year. He only had 14 home runs.
Really?
But they said with the glove he's one of the best gloves they've seen coming out of the Mets organization in decades. And the fact that he actually lost 30 pounds between the end of the season and this season show he's going to prove something. So they're going to send him to Vegas. And I'm telling you, he's only 21 years old. I'm telling you, you watch this kid. He was a first round. He was a first round pick for the Mets, I think,
right.
3 years ago.
Yeah.
So I'm telling you, watch this kid. He is, I'm telling you, in 2 years, you're not even going to think about the name Lucas Duda anymore.
Well, I live in Vegas, during the summer, man, and we go up, we hang out with the whole team. Wally Backman's been a friend since he won, he was the USA Coach of the Year in 2005, and I hang out with him every year, but now Wally's gone, but I'll go back, and I hang out with the whole team, so I'm going to probably get his autograph. I got so many. I have literally five baseballs filled with Mets. I hang out with them here, just start naming people. I've met everybody.
Oh, that's cool. You go to see the 51s a lot then. So, yeah,
all
I mean, most likely you're probably going to have Nimmo bouncing back and forth. Conforto maybe, unless he gets that number four outfield spot. So, you're going to have, obviously you're going to have another exciting year, but I'm telling you, you mark my words right now on February 26th at 8:10 at night. I'm telling you, Dominic Smith is going to be a difference for this team 2 years down from now.
Yeah,
you mark my words.
Yeah, that's true. The Mets are 2 years away and kind of like the Giants. I believe with this, you know, a new coach and a young team, I've said that it's not going to be this year. It's going to be the Giants and, 2 or 3 years, you know, but then by that time, Manning's going to be on his way out. But I'll tell you what, Eli had an incredible season this year. He did.
He threw the ball. He threw the ball incredibly well. No question about it.
Eli had a good year. The Giants had a good year. You know, Dallas
to build on.
The charts. Hey, Dallas had those two rookies. They played fantastic this year. The Giants will probably win another Super Bowl. I'm telling you right now, they're going to go. They got the defense. And Beckham and Eli Manning has never missed anything. That guy's a Hall of Famer, man. Two
MVPs.
Two championships, yeah. He's got the tools. Got that rookie
Beckham
wide receiver.
Beckham could be a Hall of Famer too, but again, I keep going back to play selection. You know, do you remember the way they used to play Steve Smith?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In the horizontal.
Right.
I mean, they don't really have that kind of game. And Shepard is used as a tight end. He's a tight end team. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I like.
I think what they're trying to do, they're trying to go too deep to Beckham too much.
They try to go for the sexy play, and that's because
exactly.
of what he is
that's
and his attitude.
Exactly what I'm saying, you don't do.
No,
you're
right. You're absolutely right. We're not disagreeing with you, but it's just.
No, I know.
It's
I
that
know.
State
I
mean, of mind of them,
you know.
You know,
Beckham's a different like Antonio Brown on Pittsburgh. Beckham's a different receiver than that guy because that guy he does these little short cuts. He gets open. Beckham is an explosive to the house guy.
Yeah, he can get open on
right.
a dime. You know, if you watch the Super Bowl, nobody even talked about. Everybody talked about Brady. Blah blah blah. It was play selection, people. At the end,
Belichick.
Play selection was incredible. Incredible. They didn't need to force the ball. Hey, I teach music. I teach drumming. And I was watching a student yesterday with his drumsticks, how he forced the drumstick. And I says, relax. Let the drumstick gravity work itself. I'm the best teacher in Los Angeles, by the way. Nobody's better than me. And some of these people on Long Island know me. This is where I grew up. So if you're listening, I related it. And I couldn't wait to get online to talk to you guys. It's the same thing with professional sports. You watch the Knicks. Everything is pushed. And everything with the Giants, everything is pushed and it's forced. You don't win games like that.
I think you're going to be happy. I think you'll be happy with the Giants the next couple of years. Look, I'm a suffering Jet fan. They're letting everybody go now. They let Fork go. They let Mangold go. Salary cuts, this and that. I don't know what direction the team's going in. I guess they're going for a young rebuilding thing. But the Giants are in a different direction than what the Jets are going. And you know what? Dallas had Elliott, the running back, and Dak, and they stepped up better than anybody could expect.
The only thing is, if you follow the Dallas Cowboys, and again, being a Giant fan like you are, Doug, you gotta hope that maybe, you know, that both Dak and Ezekiel Elliott have that sophomore kind of a jinx, that they fall back to earth a little bit. And this, and again, you know, maybe what's going on, this might be the chance for the Giants to take that extra step, especially if Dallas falls back a little bit.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that's why the Giants have beat Dallas the last few years when they did. They capitalized on their mistakes, and that's another reason why the Giants lost. Yeah, I kept saying every game we lost pushing the ball, which forces mistakes on yourself.
You know what else? You know what else? The Giants, the kryptonite for the New England Patriots, or the New York Giants. They would have beat the Patriots in that game in the Super Bowl. I'm telling you right now, because they would have ran the ball a little more.
Huh?
Yes.
I believe we would have beat Atlanta without a doubt, because they didn't have a secondary. Everybody raved about the team. They Saints walked all over Atlanta's secondary, and I said, you know, they're going to blow it at the end because of the secondary. I proved that whole game. I was calling shots. Right. I said, all you have to do is play the short game, and New England played their play selection so perfectly that you don't have to push the ball, and the secondary will defeat itself. You know,
well, Bill Belichick had the whole hour half to analyze that team, and as he did for 2 weeks before that. But to analyze the first half, take a genius. He's a genius and he's a cheater in the same breath. No, it's the truth.
He really
got busted
on that football. What's up? Hey, you guys.
But no, look, I'm not taking anything away from Belichick. Listen, I'm not taking anything away from Belichick. The guy's a genius and he deserves everything he gets. Same thing with Brady. Those guys, you know, Brady's got his rings. He deserves everything he gets. I'm not taking anything away from those guys.
I have a question.
The only question I have is, why didn't Atlanta run the ball more in the second half of that game, and they would have won that game? Dallas would have won that game. Giants would have won that game because they would have ran the ball more. Why did Atlanta put the pedal to the metal and try jamming it down their throat, and it backfired on them, and that's how they lost?
Well, I sort of agree, but here's another thing. The Giants ran the ball a lot this year and really gotten halfway nowhere, you know. So, and to get a big run against a good New England defense, I don't know. And because we're not really an explosive team, we're not the Brandon Jacobs, Ahmad Bradshaw, or Tiki Barber anymore, you know.
No,
so,
I agree with you.
No, we agree with you. Listen, Doug, we're gonna let you fly on here, man. But listen, we appreciate.
No, I'll call you guys next week. Hey, next week I'm gonna have something funny to tell you guys, and I'd like to start once a week. I have some funny stuff that women say, like today when he won the race, she says that they started showing the people in the stand. She says, "Is he the driver?"
it'll be a different set of guys on, but definitely keep calling. We appreciate it, man.
Well, I got some funny things, my girl.
Hey, I want to ask you one question. Are you a hockey fan?
Oh, Rangers. Oh, you're
a Ranger. But let me. Now you say you live in Vegas part time too, right? You said that.
Well, what I mean is I go there a lot during the summer to see Area 51. I go to the Area 51 game.
Right. Okay. Because Vegas is coming with a new hockey.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. When the Mets moved here, I pretty much go there all the time.
Oh, all right. Well, cool. Well, listen, we'll catch you on the next show.
Right,
we appreciate it, man. All right. Take care.
You guys are the best in the world, buddy.
Oh, hey, we appreciate the love. Thanks, man. All right.
Take care.
Wow, that was a great call.
Yeah, it was great.
You had a lot of info. But again,
he's a very disgruntled Giant fan.
Exactly disgruntled. All right, but let's get back to.
Let me ask you a question about Conforto. You said you don't think he's going to make the team this year.
No, I think he's got a shot. They said he had an unbelievable offseason, a big workout regimen. I watching the game earlier. He had an unbelievable catch on a ball that kind of caught the wind and almost turned on him.
Yeah.
And he did one of these almost gymnastic. Yeah, it was a great catch.
Didn't he hit a home run today too? Yeah, I think so. But you know something? What it is with him was 2 years ago that guy came up and he was on fire, that guy. Mm-hmm. That short compact swing and he was pulling the ball over, boom. He was electric. Last year.
Being a fellow lefty, I love him.
Setback last year. I think he's gonna go back to what he did again. That short compact swing again. Like you look like today. He's got a lot of power. He's been training hard. And I hope he makes a team. I'll tell you that right now. I really do.
Yeah, Conforto. It's his second home run of the preseason already. So he's off to a great start. He has a lot to prove. He's batting 714 in the spring so far.
And
so,
Duda, I think Duda's gonna be on the DL. Duda's a little banged up right now.
Yeah, he is. He's not 100. He's not 100%. But like I said, you know, you watched Smith play. You know, he went 1-for-4 today too. Scored a run. You know, nice little. Actually, Keith was unbelievably praising his hit that he had, just basically taking a swing left-handed and just pushing the ball out to the left field line. Beautiful, I mean, gorgeous swing.
Pure hitter right there. That was a nice
exactly,
swing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you like to see. Now, well, I don't know you don't want to talk about baseball right now, but I just want to say something with the staff. Okay? Harvey gets back to his old form. If he can recover from that injury, because that injury did end Carpenter's season, it ended A.J. Burnett's season, same injury he had.
A lot of guys.
It's a deadly season-ending injury.
Mm-hmm.
He's saying he feels great, he's ready to rock and roll. Maybe he's got to ease up on a little bit of it with his pitches, because he forces a lot of stuff. But if Matz is healthy, DeGrom, Syndergaard's a superstar.
He's a beast.
Yeah. I mean, you got the best pitcher staff. And if Wheeler comes back, and I know he had a setback.
Baby step him. That's all. Baby just step baby him.
Because you don't need him right now.
Nope.
But if Wheeler is back there with those five men back there, you have the best staff in baseball.
Without question.
Without question. Familia's going to probably miss 30 days. They haven't come down with anything yet.
No, I have a feeling it's going to be a month.
Yeah, I think it's going to be 30. It's going to be a month. Well, even though we got off on it, that's what the Major League Baseball does.
Yeah, exactly.
They're going to nail him for a month. And we'll see what happens. I mean, you know what?
But we got about 10 minutes to go before we have to go to commercial break. But let's just get back to what we needed to get back to. Again, hashtag weightlift. That's the hashtag with Dougie Wade. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I mean, again, you know, it seems like every coach has been fired. Ken Hitchcock in St. Louis. You know, Mike Yeo comes in, the team does well. Doug Wade comes in, they're doing well. Boston, Claude Julien gets fired, and their coach, they start off like a house on fire. So it's every team that's fired their coach has seemed to turn their team around. It's been quite an interesting.
The Bruins have been 7-3 in the last 10 games. They've been off. We're 6-4. Yeah, you know what though? It's going to be tough. I touched this a little bit. I don't know if the Islanders want to go out and give up some prospects right now to go get a Duchesne, or if you do get Duchesne, you got to sign him for long term if you can. If you do go get them, you have to, I hope they make the playoffs. I'll tell you that right now. I really do. But do you risk those young players for a guy like Duchesne to push them to the playoffs? Because it's going to be tough getting in there. What's your opinion? What do you think of that?
I think because of the ownership situation and, you know, Garth wasn't their guy. I mean, Garth's been, he's the second or third longest tenured GM in the NHL right now. But he's got something to prove. And I think the next 72 hours is going to be an extremely huge litmus test for him.
You're Garth Snow right now.
I'm Garth Snow right now.
What do you do?
I really think you've got to make a play for Matt Duchesne.
I agree with you. 100%.
You have to make a play for him.
I agree.
You have a minor league organization right now that is on freaking fire. I mean, yes, you have an NHL goaltender down there who had won 12 in a row before losing one, but that's not the point. You've got guys down there that are contributing, that are effective, and can help. You've got guys in your junior system that are ready to come up, that I think have enough talent that'll be able to contribute and help. But you know what? You're not going to be able to play all of them with the guys, with the regular, your quote-unquote regular guys that you have on this lineup. And what do you need to do to make this team more explosive? You need to make a stand. And right now, you have a defenseman on the shelf who is a warrior, loves this team, loves the organization. That's all fine and dandy, but you know what?
Right now,
you have a defenseman that's jumped in and taken his spot.
Right.
And they've done better with him than with the veteran.
And you can get some value right now when Hamonic comes back.
Right. Travis Hamonic would be a unbelievable help to a team like Colorado, without question. So that's piece number one. Piece number two, you have a goaltender.
Halak.
You have Halak. Yes, he's $5 million for the next 2 years. But you know what? They have Varlamov, I think, who they've had enough with because of his background and all the problems that he's had out there with a domestic violence situation and being hurt a lot. So I think they're ready for a change of pace. I think Halak would be a great place for him to sit. So you've got Halak, you've got Hamonic, and you put in a minor leaguer. Who that minor leaguer would be, I'm not sure. You got a few chips to play with. They may want a number one or a number two. I'd put a number two in there. But you get three of that, and then you can take Duchesne's contract because you're taking $8.5 million off the books, and you're getting six back.
Right.
So
it's a good deal.
That would work because they need defensive help in the worst way, and I think Hamonic would be a great help to them. You know, some people may think I'm nuts, but you could put a Ryan Pulak in there too, because you know what? Everybody thought Ryan Pulak was the greatest thing since sliced bread, but you know what? He hasn't been the best defenseman on Bridgeport this year.
No.
Devin Toews has been
way
above
Ryan
Pulak. So you've got him, you got Wotherspoon, you got a couple of other guys ready to go, which means if you want to get a player like Duchesne, you're going to have to trade a Pulak-type player to get him. So I think if I'm Gar Snow, I've got to make that deal. I mean, obviously there are other teams with other players that are going to be available. Dallas is definitely going to dump players. Detroit's going to dump players, but no Thomas Vanek. There are plenty of guys out there that could be for the taking. Patrick Sharp is, but he's a rental player. I don't think they're going to go for something like that. But from what I'm hearing, the big thing I think is going to be defensemen moving.
Shattenkirk.
Of course, the Rangers are going to be always looking at him because he's a local Connecticut product. Johnny Oduya, who just came back to play after missing a couple of months in Dallas, he's going to definitely go. Michael Delzato is definitely a possible candidate. Another candidate, here you go, Mark Streit.
Yeah.
Now, if Philadelphia decides to dump, and I think they're going to, and Streit's a UFA next year, you know, that's, you know, for a team that needs a good solid number four, you know, he could even be a two, you know, on a decent team and be a leader that he is. So obviously, you know, defensemen are going to be the big thing. And obviously we know what happened today in LA with Ben Bishop going to the Los Angeles Kings for Peter Budaj and a couple of other players. You know, very interesting. You know, what I'm reading, I don't think LA's done yet. I think I think that maybe Bishop could be going somewhere else. I don't think he may necessarily be staying in LA long. That's another thing that's coming out. So obviously the next 72 hours is going to be a big interesting time for GMs, fans, and players alike. By the way, what'd you think of the outdoor game last night? Did you watch it?
Yeah, I watched a little bit of it. It was pretty cool.
They were pretty scared because the day before in Pittsburgh it was 74 degrees.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
And it turned down it was actually snowing during the first intermission, which I thought was really cool. But,
I like those games. I think they should do more. I know they only do a few a year. I think they should do more.
No, I think you'd oversaturate it. I think a couple is just enough. It gives you a little bit of a taste.
I'd like to have one more at Yankee Stadium again. Islanders Rangers.
I think we should have one at Citi Field.
I'm all for that right now.
Yeah, there you go. See?
I don't know why they haven't done that.
Well, I think it's gonna come. But, you know, I don't know who it would obviously be against, but it would be quite interesting. I'm just, to those that are listening live right now, obviously the Rangers lost 4-1 to the Columbus Blue Jackets. So I think Columbus, overtakes them again, didn't they?
They're at 83. Rangers are at 82.
So the Rangers right now are at the number one wild card, and obviously 14 points ahead of the second wild card, which is, which is Boston, right? No, or did Boston jump ahead too?
Boston is at 70. We're at 68.
And Toronto's at 69.
Yeah.
Okay.
So right now we're out of a playoff spot.
Right.
I mean, it's close. It's going to be tight. And they got a tough road schedule coming up, right? In the next couple of games.
What, the Islanders?
Yeah.
Big Six?
Big Six.
Starting in Dallas on Thursday.
Tough.
Thursday, then Friday night in Chicago, and then they head up to Alberta and British Columbia before heading back to St. Louis to come home. It's going to be a big, this is the litmus test. This is the game this is the six that scares you. I mean, right now, you came out of the Eastern Conference road trip 2-1.
Which is good.
You've got to come out of the West 4-2 or better.
4-2 or better, I agree
with
you.
You have to come out. You have to get at least 8 out of the 12 points on this trip to stay afloat.
Because then
you're almost even with your home and away games, although they do end. I know they end the year with a 4-game road trip in April to end with the last day of the season against Ottawa at home in Brooklyn on April 9th. So that they're gonna it's gonna be quite interesting how they have to beat some serious teams in that last week of the season.
But the Islanders did this to themselves in the beginning of the year. They played at home.
They definitely did.
Yeah.
They dug themselves a hole that they got themselves out of, and they don't look too bad doing it. But right now, the next 10 days are really going to be the big test to see whether there is a possibility for the playoffs. As we talked about before we came on the air, outside, 21 games left in the season, got to finish 14-7 or better. That would put the Islanders right now at 96 points. Last year, I think it was 98 points that took a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference.
I think they're going to go close to that or a little better.
Right.
To be honest with you. The way Boston's been playing.
Actually it was 96 points. That's right. The Islanders had 100. They had the first play, the first one. Well, Philadelphia had the second one at 96 points. So.
I think it's going to be higher this year.
It could be 98, 99. Yeah, absolutely. The way that the top three teams in the conference have just taken so many points. It was like the West last year. Except there was such a big jump at the top, although the eighth seed was Minnesota at 87, but still, you're talking 100 points to make a playoff spot. That's crazy.
You know what it is? Because you have the Panthers are right there at 66. Mm-hmm. The Flyers are at 60. I mean, everyone's like this. The Toronto Maple Leafs are 69. There's too many teams that are clumped up right there.
But is it? I think it's a great story that when you look at it, the NHL as a whole, Toronto in the playoff spot. Right now, that's great for Toronto.
Sure
it's
is.
Great for the game of hockey. Let's see, Montreal still hanging on to first place. Calgary holding on to a wild card spot. Edmonton with unbelievable turnaround of their season, obviously with Connor McDavid and some of the other acquisitions. They're finally seeing some.
That kid's a superstar.
Oh,
isn't he?
That kid is
a superstar.
He is one sweet, sweet hockey player. But listen, we're gonna go take a break right now. And when we come back after the break, we're going to be speaking with Kirk McKnight, the author of The Voices of Baseball, The Game's Greatest Broadcasters Reflect on America's Pastime. And we're going to definitely talk some reminisce about some great broadcasters of the game. This is John Sweeney and Gary Harding on Sports Talk 1240. We'll be back after we pay a couple bills.
Listening to Sports Talk 1240 on Long Island's AM 1240. WGBB.
Country Foot Care, official podiatrists of the New York Lizards, have been delivering state-of-the-art foot care with good old-fashioned caring to Long Island residents for over 30 years. Specialists in sports medicine and foot injuries, Country Foot Care can be reached at 516-741-FEET or online at countryfootcare.com.
Want to advertise your business on Sports Talk 1240? Place an ad on sportstalk1240.com and run a radio commercial during the show every Sunday night here on AM 1240 WGBB. Our rates are very affordable. We'll even produce the radio commercial for you. Just head over to sportstalk1240.com and fill out the Contact Us form and let us start promoting your business today.
Unflippable, unflappable, unleakable. The Gust Buster is the only umbrella that won't flip inside out, rip, tear, or leak. Capable of withstanding winds over 55 miles per hour. All of our umbrellas are constructed of the finest quality materials and backed by a limited lifetime guarantee. What are you waiting for? Visit GustBuster.com and get your GustBuster today.
Stay connected to Sports Talk 1240 by following us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Sports Talk 1240.
You're listening to Sports Talk 1240, broadcasting every Sunday night beginning at 8 p.m. right here on Long Island's AM 1240 WGBB, the station that serves your community. And now, back to the show.
And we're back on Sports Talk 1240, Sunday, February 26, 2017. Gary Harding and John Sweeney with you for the second half hour of our show, and we will be having a guest on in a couple minutes. But just looking at the scores, John, again, big game in Florida, big meaning to the Islanders. Right now it's 1-1 after 1, Florida against the Ottawa Senators. Zach Smith with his 15th for Ottawa, and Jonathan Marchessault, another guy that came out of nowhere, was a Ranger, farmhand for a while. I know that because I remember seeing, him playing against, the Bridgeport Sound Tigers. He got his 19th goal of the season for Florida. So that's great. Great going. Obviously Carolina now, pretty much out of the spot with a 3-1 loss against, the Calgary Flames. Blackhawks 2-1 up after one. But now we're going to switch some gears and we're going to talk about that lovely sport of baseball. You know, John, it was just great sitting at home this afternoon at 1 o'clock. Turning on Channel 11 and seeing Gary Cohen, Ron Darling, and Keith Hernandez back on the mic covering Mets baseball.
There's nothing better.
There is nothing better. But our guest that's coming on knows a lot about those voices and is actually the writer, author of two books. But we're going to talk about the baseball one. But this gentleman's name is Kirk McKnight, and he's calling us from Las Vegas, Nevada. And he wrote the book, The Voices of Baseball, the game's greatest broadcasters reflect on America's pastime. And Kirk is joining us now on Sports Talk 1240. Kirk, it's Gary and John. Good evening. Happy Sunday. And thank you for joining us tonight.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
Oh, no problem. No problem. Again, John and I, huge Met fans, and we constantly are talking about the broadcasting scene. And obviously, you know, you've written these two great books. I've read the hockey book. The hockey book is tremendous. I'm waiting to get my hands on the base book now. But what got you getting into writing about the broadcasting side of the business?
Well, I felt like the broadcaster's perspective is a perspective that really people haven't really tapped into. You know, I wanted to do a tour basically of baseball and its venues, but you know, you've seen that happen before. You know, people do a Fromer's Guide kind of tour of the ballparks to tell you what's the best eat. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you know, I think that it's, you know, it goes to say that every stadium and ballpark is different from the next. So that in and of itself deserves its own story. And then I figured I'm not going to be the one to tell these stories. People would want to hear from the people who've been there longer than anybody. The broadcasters have been there longer than the players, the managers. They sometimes outlast the owners. Vin Scully outlasted the city of Brooklyn, you know, things like that.
Oh, so, yeah.
Those are the kinds of things that you want from that kind. You know, that's the perspective you want. Somebody who's there in every day, 162 games a year for going on 40, 45, 50, 67 years. So who better to give a perspective of those things than the broadcasters?
Like when a name comes to me, like we were Mets fans. So Bob Murphy. He was 50 years. I was just looking up the bio and 50 years he was announcing.
I mean, and so many broadcasters from New York just loved him, you know. I'm from out west, you know. I'm from out in Las Vegas, so I never really listened to Bob Murphy so much, but I was able to get a perspective on him from these guys who grew up in New York, some guys who went away to college, and that experience was taken from them because, you know, the TV and the radio things, they didn't have that access, and so they really kind of, it's like a piece of them goes away. Tom McCarthy was basically saying something about that.
Right.
When he went away, you know, it basically took Bob away from him. and it was something, it was a piece of his life that was missing kind of thing.
You know, I mean, again, John, you know, and I are almost, you know, in the same age bracket. You know, I grew up, you know, following the game in the late 60s, early 70s. And to me, you know, especially, you know, with the story of the Mets, because many of their broadcasters, obviously Ralph Kiner lasted for so many years. You know, and not only was he broadcasting a game, but he was telling you a story, but I guess in the case of you, you know, hearing a lot, you know, and writing a lot about some of these guys, these people became part of your family, you know? I mean, to me,
yes.
You know, I love Lindsey Nelson, I love Ralph Kiner, but to me, Bob Murphy, listening on more on the radio than on TV, because obviously then, you know, in the late 60s and 70s, the guys flipped. They would, you know, do three innings and they're on the TV, then jump over to the radio and do three innings on the radio. I literally would listen to the game, watch the game on TV, but listen to Bob Murphy on the radio because he gave you that story. And I think in a lot of the books, I know reading your hockey book, it was the same way. These guys not only, you know, gave you the play-by-play, but also told you a story in the same time. And I think that's what got me interested in broadcasting and things like that, because they made sure that they not only told you the description of what was going on, the play, the runner, you know, the situation, but they told you the story. And that's what I think impresses me the most.
I mean, the very, very first page after the dedication to my wife, of course, but the very first page.
Smart move.
Yeah. There's three quotes. One's from Dick Enberg, one's from Rick Riz of the Seattle Mariners, and one's from Dick Bramer. But Rick's quote is the one on the back of my business card, because it's saying, can you put the fans, as a radio broadcaster, can you put the people that are there listening, can you put them in that seat right there on the third baseline? Can you put them there, and can you give them that, you know? And it's so important to think about the radio broadcasters and TV broadcasters as well. I don't want to take away from the TV broadcasters, but what a great testament to the importance of a radio broadcaster, painting that canvas, you know, painting that picture. You have a blank canvas. You got to basically paint the picture for the people because they're totally relying on you.
Do you ever find out, Kirk, just speaking of that, like I said, you know, Bob was a definite example, but in researching this in these books, Did you find that there were certain guys that, you know, through whoever your interviews were, that you found out, especially the older broadcasters, that some of them, you know, as they got into TV, that they weren't as good on TV as they were on radio?
I don't know if we ever got to those distinguishing things, but one lesson I did learn is that the playoffs stop, you know, the beginning of the playoffs is the end of the TV broadcast basically for these guys unless they're on the national network.
Right.
And I got some stories from Joe Buck because obviously he's on the national broadcast of the World Series. But when you talk about these guys on an individual team by team basis, you know, you want them to share those moments, you know, how was it like to broadcast that 18 inning game? Well, that was turned over to the network. It was no longer the responsibility of the, you know, of the affiliates and the local TV. It was on the national network. So, you know, that might have been maybe something, but there was never any, you know, distinguishing or any kind of, you know, belittling, I guess, or you know, longing for those days back in radio. But, yeah, that's the way I saw it. That was, you know, I did aim to talk more to radio broadcasters than TV, and, you know, some of them do both. And and it's always great because you want those seminal moments, and you want that to be part of your book.
I see you got Harry Carey in here, right? I just got out of the service in the 90s, and I drove cross country and I went to Chicago. I was in the Army, and I said, let me take a trip cross country. I want to go out to California. And I stopped at a Cubs game, and he got up, and I'm sitting there, and you know, he's up there, Harry Carey's up there singing, and take me out to the ball game in the seventh inning, and it was just incredible. It's a thought that I have in my head that I will never forget, and I explain that to my kids. It's just a different situation when you go into the game, and I agree with you. Listening to the radio, have a little transistor radio in your hand, watching the game, and listening to on the radio. It's just something that that's why baseball is one of my favorite sports.
Yeah, I mean, the broadcasters who talked to me about Harry Carey just said how much he loved it, how much he enjoyed it. Because I mean, you don't have to think too long to realize that in those years, the Cubs weren't good. How fun could it be broadcasting for a horrible team like that?
It was tough. He had to come up with a lot of information. A lot of good stories he had. A lot of good stories.
I mean, you're out west. I mean, obviously you're in Vegas and that, but, I mean, what is it going to, you know, obviously be like this year, you know, listening to Dodgers baseball home games and not hear Vin Scully? I mean, and I know being out here in New York, and my parents, you know, being Brooklyn Dodger fans, living in Brooklyn in the '50s, you know, obviously, you know, Vin Scully was a part of their nomenclature. And then, of course, the team goes to L.A. and we all know what happened there. But I literally made sure that every chance I had last season when the Dodgers had a game on MLB Network or on the package or whatever, I made sure I turned it on. And I'll tell you something. It was amazing that 67 years into a career that not only did Vin Scully do a good game, but he seemed to get with the times, especially when he's talking about Twitter things and social media. You know, you don't expect that coming out of a voice of an 85-year-old man.
No.
But he still became relevant. And I just, you know, for the people that live out in California, I just can't imagine what it's going to be like this season listening to a Dodger game and not listening to Vin.
I know, and I'm gonna miss it. I'm gonna miss it. I mean, I've dreaded it for these years.
Were you a Dodger fan growing up?
I wasn't a Dodger fan so much as I was a Scully fan. So when Scully called me out of the blue on my day off, basically said, "This is Vin Scully. I broadcast Dodger baseball." I basically had to laugh because I'm like, "You said hello."
Yeah.
You said hello, and I already knew who you were, you know?
Well, he's got the voice where you could be sitting in an airport or whatever, and you hear two words come out of his mouth, and you know it's him right away.
Yeah, exactly.
It's you must have had, like, the hair on the back of your neck standing up talking to him on the phone.
Well, it really was, you know, there were moments in my broadcast, and not in the broadcast, book, that I was thinking, okay, I'm not going to be surprised, this, you know, I'm not going to, you know, because more and more things happen. Talking to John Sterling face to face was something that I thought at the beginning of the project would be surreal. And then it happened, you know?
Yeah.
And talking to Michael Kay in person, talking to John Miller in person. And so, but when Vin Scully called, it was just kind of like, okay, that I did not expect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I really am totally surprised.
So through this book, was there any big surprises, you know, just getting information from certain broadcasters that you just didn't, maybe like a particular quote or something that you just did not expect to come out of their voice or somebody else's voice that just totally blew you away?
Well, I don't know about quote in particular, but I'll tell you, I learned a lot of scientific and meteorological lessons with this book because I didn't even, you know, I'm from back west, you know, and when I think of a west coast or anything like that, I'm thinking sunny, good weather, not even realizing that during the summer, during the, you know, after spring gets in, that the west and the west coast is cold for ball players because you go east of the Mississippi, we're talking humidity at the 90% level. The ball is just coming off the bat like crazy. People are just drowning in, you know, in their own sweat and whatever. And I don't even think of that. And now I realize why, you know, the National League West has such great pitching numbers. And sometimes the American League West in certain areas has such great pitching numbers because the ball just dies when that marine layer comes out and it's, you know, it feels like it's 60 degrees outside. Whereas if you're playing in Cleveland, you got 70% humidity or whatever is going on. And it just feels like you're in a sauna.
Well, I'll tell you the truth, Kirk. Yeah. One of the coldest Augusts I have ever been to was a game at, well, then it was called Pac Bell Park when the Giants first opened up that new facility. I have never, ever experienced so much cold in August in my entire life than sitting out in left field at that game. I mean,
yeah.
It's just an amazing feeling. I just would never have thought that, you know, as you said, meteorologically. I mean, we used to, John and I used to go into Citi Field in August and sweating your you-know-whats off. You know,
the humidity kills you.
It does kill you, but yeah, it's amazing, you know, the contrast involved.
Yeah, one of the things that you can trace some success of some teams now to these things. When the Giants stopped worrying about knocking the ball out of the ballpark day in and day out with hitters like J.T. Snow, Jeff Kent, Barry Bonds, all these guys, and focus on their pitching, they win 3 World Series out of 5, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it gets to be this point where it's like, it's an even number year. You anticipate them going to the World Series and winning it last year, even if they were playing against the Cubs. You're like, it's an even number year. They're like, infallible, you know? And, yeah, it's because they finally did the right thing and picked their team according to their setting. And, like, you can't argue that kind of success.
Let me ask you a question, because I missed this myself. I don't know if you touched on this in your book or not, but did any of the broadcasters talk about the doubleheader? Because I used to love going to a doubleheader, and it just takes so much time and talent that they have to call 2 games. But did you touch on any of that, how they just done away with fading that out of baseball?
We didn't really touch on it, but you can tell there's just simple, subtle things that they say where you can tell how the season draws long. So I can imagine a town like St. Louis having a doubleheader in August. Forget that, you know?
Yeah.
And that's for a broadcaster, too, because there's some stories from the old Busch Stadium. These guys basically, Jack Buck used to sit there. This is in the book. Jack Buck used to sit there and just sit in shorts or roll his pant legs way past the knee and just sit with his feet in buckets of ice because that was the only way he was going to get through the game. These guys basically, after the game's over, they're trying to find a shower somewhere in one of those press levels, and just because they know when they change out, even if they change into a new shirt, the one, you know, if they soak the last shirt out,
mm-hmm.
they're gonna change into a new one. What's the point of doing that? Because as soon as you put that shirt on, it's gonna be drenched in sweat again. So there's just things like that, like little things that people don't really know about that the broadcasters go through. I mean, the players go through it, obviously. The fans are probably sitting there going through it. I can't imagine a fan, you know, wanting to go to a nightclub after a game in St. Louis and trying to pick up on a girl. I don't think that's going to happen.
Not with these guys. Yeah, that's for sure. Just getting into, again, you mentioned on the local scene, obviously you talked with John Sterling, and I mean, us being Met fans, you know, we kind of actually make fun of Sterling a lot, but he is definitely, I think, in my mind, one of the most quirkiest characters in the game. I'm sure you got a lot of that through your interviews with him as well.
Yeah, I mean, he is, and I was a Braves fan as a kid. I was a Dale Murphy fan.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Wow.
So I found that connection because I was like, there, you know, whenever I'd watch Yankees games, I'd sit there and go, now there's something about John Sterling that obviously is the Yankee broadcaster, something that's strangely familiar. Read the bio on him before the interview. I'm like, that's why.
Yep.
He was my voice when I grew up. Him, Skip Carey, mm-hmm. you know, Pete Van Waren, Ernie Johnson Sr., those guys, those were my guys when I was into TBS. And so John Sterling, when I'm sitting there talking to John Sterling, it was great because he was talking about Brian Roberts. And he says, he basically is talking about some Broadway play, and he says, you know, he's talking about Russ Hodges used to say, bye bye baby. And he goes, if
right.
Brian Roberts ever hits home run, it's gonna be bye bye Brian.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how many Roberts had hit ever at all, if that season at all. That night, I interviewed him at Angel Stadium. That night, Brian Roberts hit the go ahead home run in the ninth inning. It was unbelievable.
He had some good ones. He's with the A-Rod one was I have an A, it's an
the
A-bomb
from A-Rod.
A-bomb yeah. from A-Rod. He had some what he's famous for is a deep fly ball to center. And that ball is out of here in the center field that catches the ball.
The ball.
That's what we've over that over
And
the
remember
years.
He was also one of the first voices of New York Islanders hockey
yeah.
for us being hockey fans in that but you know, like I said, you know, obviously, there are teams, you know, now you pretty much have one broadcaster and one analyst where, you know, in growing up in our days in the 60s and 70s, you had all three guys doing play-by-play. Obviously, you know, the Yankees had the, you know, the Frank Messers and the Phil Rizzutos of the world. So there was always teams. Were there other teams in your books that in the book that you really got involved that there was some interesting stories with? I mean, obviously, you know, we New Yorkers have our connections, but were there other interesting trio stories as far as broadcasters were concerned?
Well, I mean, a lot of these guys go way back, you know, and if they don't go way back in their own careers, they go back as fans. So, you know, you have that trio, the people remembering watching Atlanta Braves broadcast and seeing Ernie Johnson Sr.,
Pete Van Wert, Skip, Carey trio. But also, some of the broadcasters I talked to, you know, they reflect on people who were their kind of their tutors, or, you know, people who were just kind of, you know, been around, you know, Vin Scully's talking about Red Barber, you know, talking about, you know, cause in 2014, you're not expecting somebody like Vin Scully to say he was mentored by anybody. And he is. And he's sitting there talking about how he was shoulder to shoulder with Red Barber, who would give him pointers, things like that. And it was just amazing for me to think that somebody actually taught Vin Scully and somebody actually gave him criticism. I can't imagine criticizing Vin Scully for anything.
No, exactly. I don't think he's ever called a bad game in his life.
And it would take a broadcaster like Red Barber, who is obviously an icon in the sport, and somebody who Vin learned a lot of things from, you know, a lot of his calls are kind of patterned after Red Barber. And the way he would call games. Mm-hmm. Dick Enberg was even saying that, you know, and Dick Enberg said, look, I'm not trying to take away from Vin Scully. He's the poet laureate of our time. He's the best ever. He said, but you can tell where he picked up some of these things. You can tell where the influence carried out. And there's a few broadcasters like that. Marty Brenneman, he broadcast mm-hmm. alongside Joe Nuxall for 31
right, for
years.
How many years? Yeah, exactly.
Years. Jack Buck alongside, why is that name? Why is the name escaping me on St. Louis? I didn't talk to the guy from St. Louis that I'm talking about, but Jack Buck was his broadcast partner for 30 years. But, yeah, Marty Brenneman and Joe Nuxall, you know, for 31 years.
Well, didn't Harry Carey do St. Louis, too, at one point?
With Jack Buck, right.
Right, okay, he did.
And then Harry got fired from, you know, from St. Louis.
And then went to the Cubs.
Yeah, or right. White Sox.
Oh, right, the White Sox first, then the Cubs. Right, right.
And that's history right there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the book sounds so interesting. You got stuff about Joe DiMaggio, the Bambino. You know, guys should go out. It's the Voices of Baseball. It looks like it's an awesome book. I'm going to get it. And
it's on Amazon. And actually, I read your book, The Voices of Hockey, and I've absolutely enjoyed that too. So we want to make sure we get that a plug. And you know, you go through every team in that, which is, I thought was really cool. And again, they're great insights. So, why don't you just tell us, Kirk, in a couple minutes we got left, just how, they can get in touch with you or get in touch with, or actually purchase the book.
Well, you can purchase the book on Amazon or on Barnes & Noble, maybe even in Barnes & Noble stores. I'm sure they're carrying it, but always on BarnesandNoble.com or Amazon.com. Indie bound, Books a Million. Just look it up. You'll find it. It's available in paperback now, the baseball book is, and it's available on Kindle. So if you guys are out there, and the thing about the paperback book is it has about 10 or 11 more pages of content than the hardcover did, because I interviewed three more broadcasters, Pat Hughes, Dick Enberg, and Joe Buck. So
wow.
It's meatier
and
it's cheaper.
Yeah, that sounds great. And if anybody wants to get in touch with you on the Twitter world?
Yeah, the Voices of MLB, and MLB is on cap. So the Voices of MLB, that's my Twitter handle. You can find me there. And on Instagram at the Voices of Baseball, where baseball is actually
capitalized.
Spelled out.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Listen, Kirk, it was great talking with you. We hope continued success with the book, and we'll catch you down the road.
I appreciate the interview, guys.
No problem.
And good luck with your Atlanta Braves this year.
Yeah.
The Mets fans.
Thank you, guys.
They got
All
some
right.
good young prospects
All right.
coming up, but you'll be okay.
All right, take
new
care,
park,
Kirk.
New field.
Yeah, right. All right, have a good night. Thanks again.
Thank you, guys.
All right, so that was Kirk McKnight, again, at the Voices of MLB. Definitely check the books out, The Voices of Baseball and The Voices of Hockey. I highly recommend the hockey book. I can't wait to get the baseball book.
So much research you put into this.
Exactly. It's a tremendous amount. It's a labor of love, that's for sure.
Yeah. You know, just Vin Scully alone, you could do a whole book on him alone.
Yeah. Like I said, I just can't imagine. You know, you think of the West Coast. You lost, obviously, Vin Scully after 67 years. Dick Enberg did his last game for the San Diego Padres last year.
Which is insane.
You know, I'm not sure how much longer John Miller is going to do. You know, those are three unbelievable. I mean, me being also a closet Orioles fan, I used to love listening to John Miller on WBAL. So, right. I mean, he had a great story, but,
there's nothing, like I said, sitting in the stands with the transistor radio, there's nothing better than that.
Yeah, no, there isn't. But so we got a couple minutes. Unfortunately, we missed John last tonight. John Panarese. He would have loved. Yeah. I'm sure, you know, him with his situation. The Voices were big in his life. I know he always talks about, you know, the old time Met broadcasters. And again, I think
you know, I mean, we may be biased, but I love listening to Gary, Keith, and Ron. I mean, they're great. I mean, you know, Howie's,
I like Howie better on.
On the radio.
On the radio with the.
Because again, he tells a good story.
He's fantastic.
And he has a little schmutzing going on, a little laughing and that. And so it's a lot of fun. So, but,
I have to get one thing out before
we go.
It. It's nothing to do with baseball. It has something to do with the New York Islanders. And I promise this person, I'm going to bow down and say, this is the God's honest truth though. Josh Bailey, Claire, is playing off the charts, and I will apologize for all the bad stuff I said about him. I just wanted to get that off my chest before I go.
You know, I know.
But Josh is playing fantastic.
Unfortunately, I think she's listening to watching the Oscars right now, but tomorrow when this goes on podcast, I am making sure she hears this from you. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. But look, trade deadline's in 72 hours.
Here we go.
Yeah, so
whoever we get. If we don't, we don't, and then we just ride it out.
We have to, they gotta bust their buns.
Halak might be moved. You made a good point before. I think Halak might get moved.
Yeah, it's quite possible. I mean, Garth has
somebody
to
could use him.
Garth has to do something. Right now, I will honestly say he's a friend of mine. I love him a lot, but his job is on the line. And he has to come out and do something or else I have a feeling we're gonna have a new general manager on Long Island next year if he doesn't. It just comes down to that.
And we'll
We'll
see. Well, you know, Doug Waite, as an intern, jumped in and he is doing fantastic, in my opinion.
I mean, is he going to be the full time coach? Time will only tell. You know, when
he wasn't thrilled about it.
He wasn't thrilled about it in the beginning. You know, when he first came on board. You know, about being the
well, it's a tough one because he was close with Capuano. I mean, that's his buddy there
again. And we talked about the whole situation was, and you saw it especially in the last couple of games when you watch Doug Waite. Yes, he's your friend, he's a buddy, he's a great guy and all that, whatever. But if there's a problem, there's something you're doing wrong, he got in the players' faces.
Yeah.
Ryan Strome is a definite example. If you look, the last couple of weeks, he's been tremendous. Why? Because Waite's got in his face, he's told him what he's needed to do, he's corrected the problems, and he's played strong.
We interviewed Doug Waite on this show, me and you,
yeah.
And Waite told Strome right out, he had to gain weight, go eat some meat, start working out and doing this. But now it looks like it's paying off because Strome is playing better as well.
Well, listen, John, it was a great show, as always.
As always.
As always, again, at G Harding WGBB is my Twitter handle, at
Alleycat010.
We're always talking Islanders. Again.
And the voices of baseball, the book.
Exactly. Check it out on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Again, great show. John, thanks for coming on. And in the words of my friend, the late, great Bill Hayes, keep skating, everybody. Got another hour of Sports Talk 1240. Stay tuned.
In the previous program did not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.